It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. I'm so happy that you're here. I want to say thank you to everybody who has commented, given us a thumbs up, or somehow have reached out to me regarding the quote of the day. So every show now, we start with a quote of the day. Today is no different. Today's quote comes from H. Jackson Brown, Jr. And by the way, if you have a favorite quote, send it to me, and I'll be glad to read it on the air. The best preparation for tomorrow is doing your best today. The best preparation for tomorrow is doing your best today. Again, author is H. Jackson Brown, Jr., all right, I'm excited. We have Amy Lawrence back on the show. Amy Lawrence is a partner at the lovely law firm in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where she predominantly practices criminal law and civil rights violations. Amy's focus and her heart is centered around giving a voice to those who so desperately need it. Amy makes no apologies when holding the system to a higher standard and demanding that they do better. By the way, Amy's favorite hobby is hunting for shark's teeth on the beach, which is a very difficult thing to do. Amy Lawrence, welcome back.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. You know what? I also like to hunt for those shark's tooth, but those things are hard to find.
I love how my partner put that in there. one of the things that I love about looking for shark's teeth is I have two little boys. They're 5 and 7, and we love going to out on the ocean and out on the beach. And there's something so soothing about not thinking about anything else in the world except exactly what's in front of your face. And
yes.
And seashells and shark's teeth are pretty cool to do it. And I'm really good at it, which is also fun. It's like, when you do a puzzle, you're on vacation, there'll be a puzzle, and you'll sit down, you'll do it, and it's like the most soothing thing, and all you're thinking about is just like these little pieces, and you're not thinking about mortgages or, all these awful things that happen in the world. And so that's kind of where I am and kind of why I like to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely
and my,
correct.
And my boys think it's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of fun, and I have to say that I am not that good at it. I go with a buddy of mine every now and then, and he can, he can spot them from like a mile away. It's like, oh, there's one, dude, come on, and it's just like, it's like anything else. I just have to practice a little bit more, but it is a lot of fun, and I have to say I've never struck out. I always am fortunate enough to walk away with a few, it is cool. All right, so let's jump into this, and I'm so excited to have you on the show because I've been thinking about this Me Too movement, and I wanted to get your general thoughts about it since, A, you kind of, you practice in criminal law, plus you're also a female, so kind of give me your thoughts.
I mean, I'm amazed. It makes my heart leap out of my chest when I see these women coming forward and telling their stories because we all have our stories. And I'm 37 years old, and I represent women who are victims of sexual violence every day. And it took me being 37 years old in this Me Too movement to realize the things that happened to me weren't okay. And it gets me choked up because it just made me realize that I was actually at a women's conference, philanthropy conference, not too long ago, and I ran into a judge that I adore and her best friend who's an attorney, and we were talking, and I said it took me to be 37 years old in this movement for me to recognize what happened to me wasn't okay. And so, I'll kind of tell you what kind of happened. And in the grand scheme of life, I always felt like you know, my story and what happened to me wasn't as bad as what most women go through, and so it didn't deserve to be told. But one of my first jobs, I worked for an attorney, and he would drink. And every day he would tell me about every sexual endeavor he ever had. Every day of work. And that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
But it took this movement, and it took me being 37 years old, even though I deal with this every day, to recognize that what happened to me wasn't okay. And that there's really no hierarchy in what happened, that it all sucks and it's all bad, and it should have never happened to begin with. So, like I said, my heart leaps out of my chest when I see these women coming forward and telling their stories, because they felt like it would fall on deaf ears, or they'd be punished for telling what happened to them. And now they don't.
Yeah.
Now they don't.
You know what?
I don't think it gets
what's that?
Go ahead. No, I said I just don't think it gets any better than that. You know, when women feel like they have a voice, you know, or anybody feels like they have a voice to stand up and say what happened to me wasn't okay.
Right.
It's a good day. It's a good day.
It is a good day. And you know what? I want to, there are unfortunately some people out there that are in places of power, and you know, some of them intentionally abuse it, and some of them aren't aware that they're abusing it, or that they're over, you know, that they're stepping over the boundaries, you know. And so here's this guy that is drinking every day,
you know,
and talking about these things.
Let me tell you why I say that's bullshit, and I'm apologizing for cussing, but I'm not. And the reason why I say that is because they wouldn't be okay with those things being said to their little girl or their wife or their mother. So they know. They know better.
Yeah.
To say that they don't is a lie. You know what I mean?
They choose not to
acknowledge it, but they know better.
Yeah, and so what I mean that some of them don't know better is that I'll give you an example. When you're working with a team of people, you get to know each other, and you might say a remark that is hurtful or, inappropriate. And because our society has changed so much, that these standards are also changing and evolving. And I'll give you a personal, example in my life. This is, I don't know, 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago. So it's been a long time. And we're all standing around, and I made a gay joke. And everybody laughed. And so later on that afternoon, this guy that I had been working with for over a year steps in my office and says, "Hey, can I talk to you real quick?" And I said, "Sure." And we were always, I thought we were good friends, and I guess we still, I mean, I thought we were good workmates, I guess. And we stayed in contact with each other, but he said to me, "Hey, what you said today, really bothered me because I'm gay and, you know, and all that other stuff." And first of all, I didn't know he was gay, you know, it's just like, mm-hmm. you know, it just
right.
kind of threw me for a loop. But the reality is that, you know, jokes, that the simplest way of putting it, jokes that you wouldn't tell in your place of worship, your church, your synagogue, your, you know, whatever,
yeah.
probably shouldn't be told, the jokes that you wouldn't tell in your place of worship shouldn't be told at the office. That's what I learned from that. And that, I was
did
so
you,
appreciative.
Did you apologize?
I did apologize. And like I said, we stayed friends and we stayed
yeah.
in contact with each other. And so here's the deal. Two things. A, I was glad that he, you know, that he stuck up for himself, that he was, you know, brave enough to say, "Hey, you know, here's the deal." So, you know, kudos for standing up for yourself. That's number one. Number two, that's when I realized that, you know, again, about that whole, you know, what you said at the office is should be the same standard that you might use at a place of worship. You know, keep it clean, keep it family friendly. And then I also learned that there are a lot of people who would not have said anything, and what they would have done is they would have harbored bad feelings, they would have become bitter, they would have let that fester and maybe ruin the relationship, or, you know, they would have left that place of employment, and unbeknownst to me, they would have been saying, you know, they would harbor these bad feelings, and I wouldn't know why. So for those individuals out there who, you know, are feeling this way, it is time to stand up there's a lot of ways of letting people know that, maybe their joke or their, retelling of sexual exploits or whatever, do not work well for you, that they're bothering you, that they're offensive. But anyway, back to your story. Here you are. You're 37 years old. You're a smart, intelligent individual. You passed the bar. You're practicing law.
Passed the bar exam on the first time. I'm a smart girl.
On the first time.
I know all these things. But, you know, it's became so ingrained in our society. Matter of fact, when I put hashtag me too, and my sister called me and she said, "What happened to you?" And I said, "Katie." And I mentioned, you know, the guy I worked for, his name. And she said, I didn't think of that. I didn't, you know, because it's been so great. This is just what happens to us as women. Do you know what I mean? And it's not okay. It's not okay.
I remember seeing
the little girl the other day. Let me just tell you the story real quick. I remember seeing this little girl the other day, and she'd been sexually assaulted at school. This young man grabbed her and threw her against the wall and put his hard penis against her, through his clothes and her clothes, and held her hands and did things to her that weren't okay. And I represented her as a victim in the court system. And I'm sitting in a private room with her, and she's trying to convince me that it was aggressive, unwanted sexual behavior. And she felt the need to keep saying that it was so aggressive, it was so aggressive. And I said, "Listen, sweetheart, it doesn't have to be aggressive to not be okay. The only part that has to make it not okay is that you didn't want it. It has to be unwanted."
Right.
But that's kind of like, that's how we've raised our girls and our women. I mean, this is how we're thinking. And it's taken this movement to even, like, you know, these super educated, wonderful human beings, and I'm not just saying that about myself, but, like, this judge and this other attorney, that it's taken this movement to say, this isn't okay. You can't do this. And it's not just, you know, a super aggressive, unwanted touching. It's unwanted that kicks in, you know, and then we've got to wrap our mind around that. And we've got to teach our little girls and our daughters and our sisters and all those things that this isn't okay. You know, this ain't going to fly anymore. And it stops today, you know?
And here's something interesting. Somebody sent me this. One of our listeners sent me this, and I was so grateful. This, what you say about it being ingrained in our society, people are aware of the show Mad Men, about these advertisers and you know, back in the 50s, and they were called Mad Men because they worked on Madison. Well, so here's an ad. This person sent me a list of ads from that era that are all, I mean, just crazy, over the top, sexist, and the amount of so one of the ads depicts a husband spanking her wife, his wife, and again, it shows this guy spanking his wife, and of course, you know, the facial expression that she had makes it almost like whimsical, right? Kind of like, you know,
like
whatever.
She's enjoying
and so,
it. Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah.
This is an ad for fresher tasting coffee. And if your husband ever finds out you're not store testing for fresher coffee, and then, you know, it depicts this person being domestically abused. There's another ad which is even more grotesque than that one, and it has a woman's head. A man is got his foot on her head, and then her body is like this leopard or tiger skin rug. The amazing thing is I can't figure out what they're selling, but the headline is it's nice to have a girl around the house. Anyway, so she's on the floor, and I don't know. So it's just a weird thing. But my point being is that this is the kind of stuff that has been ingrained. And so I'm gonna talk about this final ad. And again, this is the first two ads were more domestic than anything else. But then in this pile of ads that this lady sent me, this is one that's directly related to the office environment. So it's a Pitney Bowes ad, and the headline is it always illegal to kill a woman? ? That's the headline, and it's got like this boss type person. I don't know if he's frustrated. And so the lady has this look on her face of, you know, don't talk to me, you know, I've had it or whatever. And so, you know, this is something that goes, you know, that just blows me away. I mean, it just blows me away. But this is exactly what, you know, like you said, you talk about ingrained in our society, it is absolutely one of those things that it has been ingrained for years, and there is this not a culture, but maybe this mindset that it's okay to do this.
And that's the exact issue that we have, is that it's so ingrained in our culture that no one. It took a movement and a hashtag and someone, a movie star saying that this happened to me and it wasn't okay for everybody to kind of wake up, shake everything up.
Right.
And it's sad that it took all this time and somebody famous to make it happen, but I'm just so glad that it did.
You know what? I'm glad that it did too. I have, you know, my wife and I have five kids, two males and three girls, and so the blessing that I have, not only do I have three great daughters, but I also get to see things that I never would have been privy to. Gives you a different perspective, and even when we deal with the school principal, who's a woman. You know, some of the remarks that she makes, you can tell she's an older person, and you can just tell that she's had that ingrained training that you and I are talking about, and she definitely has a bias. She treats the boys differently than she treats the girls, and we had this whole rigmarole because my girl stood up to a bully on the bus, and they were suspended for it. And I said, no, you're not going to suspend my girls for standing up for somebody on the bus. You're sending the wrong message. And you know, it's one thing if they're misbehaving, in any way, you know, being rude or if they are themselves are being a bully. But when you have a girl standing up for a bully, I thought that was a good thing. And anyway, so we got it straightened out, but it's just crazy.
Been a little boy, he would have been hailed as a hero, right?
Yes. That was my point exactly. And that's why, you know, she thought about that and she lifted the suspension. So they ultimately weren't suspended at all and they didn't miss any time in class. And they were eventually recognized for doing good work. But it was amazing to me that
But you know what? It's kind of sad. It took a man to go in there and tell them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It took a daddy to go in there and say, enough. This ain't going to happen. Not under my watch.
Yeah,
I have a feeling I'd really like your little girls. so often, you know, these like daughters don't have dads that like I had parents that I could be the president of the United States if I wanted to be, and not every little girl gets that support system and gets that encouragement and gets that limitless potential in the eyes of their family. You know, my mom grew up in a family who she had a wonderful father, but he grew up in an era where women are much like children. They need to be seen and not heard. And they don't have a place at the table. And so, but she was the smartest. And my dad saw that in her, and he always encouraged her to be the smartest. And he encouraged her to do, you know, go be the CEO of the company and to negotiate the deals. And so that fell away. And, she, you know, it's like, you know, when you, whether it's an alcoholic parent or a parent that does something like this or whatever it is, it's, your children either react in one of two ways. Either they do exactly like they've been taught, monkey see, monkey do, or they go in the exact opposite. It's usually very, very seldom that there's like a middle ground. And my mom was one of those that went in the exact opposite. And so she and my dad always taught me that I could be anything I wanted to be. If I want to be a lawyer, I could be a lawyer. If I want to be a stay-at-home mom, that's okay too. And I think that's also part of the hard part is that women want to divide, you know, want to divide each other sometimes. And just like that principle, you know, they want to divide us. And
yes.
It's not about that. It's about finding the common ground.
It is. And I think ultimately it's about making yourself happy. It's not, you know, because ultimately that ultimately you have to look in the mirror and say, I am happy with the decision to do X, Y, Z. And that's ultimately what matters. That's really it. Because
all
that other
stuff. I tell my children every day when they say, Mommy, what do you want me to be when I grow up? I want you to be happy.
Yes.
And if you're happy, then I'm okay with whatever you choose.
Absolutely.
I want you to be happy.
Okay. So let's talk about this real quick, because one of the things about this Me Too movement is that a lot of these cases, you know, I mean, they really varied. Some were fairly fresh and some had been had happened a long time ago. So let's talk about this from your perspective. What makes the civil case in this kind of a sexual assault or like the misconduct that you were talking about with this man and assaulting this girl at the schoolyard, what makes these cases so hard to bring?
The victim has been told that what happened to her really isn't important. It's getting the victim to come forward. Because there's a lot of shame that comes with it because they feel like it's their fault. You know, they're sexually assaulted, you know, by a boss or, you know, touched in a way that is not appropriate, harassed in a way that's not appropriate. And so it's the fear of the victim. And, you know, the reality is that some of that some of the fear is a real fear. You know, we know in sexual harassment cases that by and large, it's never about the sex. It's always about the power, you know, to get them to do something that they don't want to do. It's never usually about the sex. It's about the power of it. And, you know, women are fearful that they'll come forward. And let's just talk about sexual harassment, not even assault, you know, that they'll be blackballed in their industry. I mean, we see, we've read article after article, like, for example, out in Silicon Valley. And if you're blackballed by one, you come forward, and even if it's proved and it shows this guy's a complete scumbag and he's doing all these horrible things and he did this horrible thing to this woman and it's you know, founded in fact that they're blackballed and they're punished for it for the rest of their lives. And so that they've got to weigh whether or not it's worth it for them. Is it worth not being able to do what they want to do and what they love to do and what they've spent their whole life preparing themselves for? Is it worth giving all that up to come forward? Because so often they're blackballed, they're dismissed, nobody listens to them, or, you know, oh, look, she's a tattletale, can't trust a tattletale. And and so they've got to carry that with them for the rest of their life. And you know, look, I've seen women, you know, we've got them going to Harvard and MIT and all these wonderful things, and then, you know, they become a sexual object in Silicon Valley. They come forward, it's founded, but then they're blackballed. And so everything that they've been preparing their whole lives for is, you know, taken from them because they decided to have a voice. Well, how shitty is that?
Yeah. Yeah,
there's
you know what?
And then we've re-victimized the victim.
Right. You know what? And this is one of those things that, you know,
Catch-22 of all catch-22s.
Right. And there's not an easy solution because, you know, you can, because here's the deal. On a surface level, you can talk to people. You can get all these Silicon Valley people in a room, and they will all agree with you, Amy. What happened to that person is wrong. This guy is a scumbucket. But and so on the surface level, they're all going to agree to that, but they're not going to practice it because you know for various reasons. It's not going to be emotional enough for them to give a crap to make a change. And of course, there's always an exception to that rule, but by and large, the individual is going to fight and struggle to make it in Silicon Valley now.
Yeah, and especially when you've got when you deal with industries that are like, especially government agencies are a prime example. Silicon Valley is a prime example that once can't shake that for the rest of your life. And they're not practicing what they're, you know, I bet every head of Silicon Valley goes into a meeting, oh, yes, we're with you, me too, the whole shebang. But they're not practicing what they're preaching, what they're agreeing to. And so it's just it's a terribly hard position to be in as a woman. Do I stand up and because when I see and I deal with a lot of victims of sexual assault and violence, a lot more than probably any human should ever have to see in a lifetime. But the one thing that stands true, whether they're children, whether they're adults, women, men, they all want to be heard. And they want somebody to look at them and say, that wasn't okay, what happened to you. Like I looked at a lady the other day and I said, I'm so sorry this happened. And she said, it's okay. And I said, no. Don't ever say that again because it's not okay. What happened to you is not okay. You are going to be okay, but what happened to you is not okay. And don't ever feel like you need to give somebody that kind of warm, fuzzy feeling to make them feel better because it's not okay. And the look on their face of relief and just, God, somebody gets it. She gets it. You know, nobody's ever said that to them. It's not okay. And all they want is their voice to be heard. It's like I looked at a case the other day, and here's a little girl who's 12 years old who was sexually assaulted by her mom's boyfriend. And the police officer, guess what he did? Nothing. The investigator did nothing. They knew who it was. They didn't arrest him. They didn't do shit. They didn't do anything. And 7 years later, another police officer gets this file one way or another, and he goes out and he talks to this girl who, in my mind, is still a little girl. She's 19.
Right.
She's a baby in my eyes. And he goes and he talks to her and he says, you know, what do you want? Tell me what happened. And you know what she wanted? She just wanted somebody to be heard, and she wanted somebody to say, this wasn't okay. And it was 7 years later.
Wow.
She said, I didn't think I was important enough. I didn't think my case was important enough. I didn't think it mattered. No, it does matter. It for sure matters. But all she wanted to say it wasn't okay.
Right. And here's the deal. I want to make this, I want to say this, that you have to kind of nip this in the bud. So, meaning that a little discomfort or a little,
absolutely.
A little
this is the deal.
Is too much because what happens is, you know, if you let that slide, then that person is going to go to the next step and the next step. And so even if it's like in my situation, an off color joke, you know, it's, you know, that's too much. Go ahead and bring it up to their attention and, you know, and kind of go from there. But it's one of those things where, you have to kind of just, even a little tiny is too much because it'll fester, it'll grow.
It always does. It always does.
Yeah.
Because you give an inch, they take a mile. And, you know, looking back on what happened to me, I always took like a, the guy approach to it, you know, laugh it off and keep going and,
right.
You know, and move on. And, you know, Amy's the dudest girl I've ever met, you know, that kind of stuff. But now as a 37-year-old woman who deals with sexual assault victims on a daily basis, I realized he was just, he was grooming me almost to see what my reaction would be, to see how far he could take it.
Yes.
Just like a child molester does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they
pick
a kid who's not going home to mom and dad and going to church on Sunday, that kind of stuff. They pick kids from broken homes, those kind of things. And it never starts off with, like, a rape or a molestation. It's always a magazine, right? Especially little boys. It's a magazine. But they're watching for your reaction to it to see how far they can take it the next time. But it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
They're just looking to push – how far can they push the envelope?
And that's why I'm saying you got to really nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this. So right now, if somebody's listening to this and they think that they're a victim and maybe they're thinking, you know, it's been a year, it's been 5 years, it's been 10 years, any advice, any thoughts?
If it's sexual assault, you should report it. Because if you can't do it for yourself, and this is what I tell victims all the time, if you can't do it for yourself, then I want you to think about every woman that comes after you. Every woman that comes after you that he's going to try to do this to or does. And if no one has the heart to stand up to him, it'll never stop. You'll just be one of 100 in his lifetime or one of 1,000 in his lifetime or one of 20 or one of 2. But either way, one of 2 is too many.
Right.
So if you don't stop it, then who's going to? And so you just got to report it. You have to report it to the police, to a rape crisis counselor. And if it happens to you now, report it. You just got to report it. And it'll be the hardest thing you've ever done. And I'll tell you, I've never been a victim of sexual assault. I consider myself the 2%. I always, I always look at people and I say, the 2% has nothing to do with money and how much money they make. It has to do with whether you've been sexually assaulted. And I'm in part of the 2%. But I've sat with women through rape kits, and it's hard. I mean, I've cried with them through the whole thing. It's something that you'll never be able, and it didn't even happen to me. And I'm just sitting with these women and help them tell their stories and get to the bottom of what happened to them. And it is hard, but we can do hard things, right?
We can do hard things. Yes.
We can do hard things. And if you can't do it for yourself, you do it for the lady that comes next or the little girl that comes next or the man that comes next, because the only way to stop, being a victim is to have a voice, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. Let's talk about school bullying. So it's switching topics a little bit, but school bullying, it's always been there.
It's the same concept.
It is about power, and we have it from elementary all the way to college, the hazing and stuff like that. So let's talk about this. What can parents do? And so let's start with the parents. What can parents do as far as school bullying?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is understand really what bullying is, because it's an overused word a lot of times. It's like I'm watching the Real Housewives or whatever, and so they say, "Oh, she bullied me." No, that's not bullying, because they don't have any power, right? There's not an imbalance of power. You guys are on equal footing. You're both millionaires. I'm sorry. To be the one that burst your bubble. But so you have to understand what bullying is. So bullying is deliberate. They're intending to hurt somebody. The bully is intending to hurt someone. It's repeated. It's not a one-time deal. It's over and over. And then there's a power imbalance. Usually they choose their victim because they're smaller or younger or a special needs child. Like, you've got all these different things. And so those three things are really what helps label a bully, is that it's deliberate, it's repeated, and there's this imbalance of power along the way that they perceive as some kind of vulnerability with the child that they're bullying. And so being able to recognize what it is the first step, I think. You got different kinds of bullying. You've got, like, physically, like pushing, poking, kicking, beating them up, that kind of stuff, which is what we always think of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got verbal stuff where they're taunting them and they're calling them names. And that reminds me of high school, you're a whore, you're a slut. Those are the kind of the things that girls, I witness girls experiencing. I remember a boy calling a special needs kid I'm not going to use the word, the R word.
Right.
So you got verbal bullying, and then you got relationship kind of stuff, you know, spreading rumors, so-and-so's pregnant or that kind of stuff. And then you got cyberbullying where, you know, kids, I didn't have this kind of stuff when I was a kid. I know you didn't either, but we've got Facebook and Instagram and, you know, 100 other social media platforms where they're sending hurtful messages or putting fake stuff out on there. And so those are the kind of things you got to look at to see what kind of bullying. One, is it bullying? And then two is, what kind of bullying is it? You know, your kids don't come home and tell you this stuff, right?
Right.
They don't come home crying and say, you know, it's rare that they come home and say, so-and-so, you know, Bobby at school was mean to me and he keeps, you know, hitting me every day or he keeps calling me names. It's rare because, you know, kids that are being bullied, they're ashamed. There's the shame that comes with it that they can't take up for themselves or if they tell that it's going to be like twice as hard on them, that kind of thing. It's very similar when we talk about the, you know, the Me Too movement, very similar because it's the same concept. And if you tell, then you're a tattletale, right? And it's going to follow you forever.
Right.
You'll never have any friends. You'll never get a job, that kind of thing. Really recognizing that something's going on with your kid and being present is a huge thing. Are they acting funny? Are they sad? Are they eating differently? You know, there's all these different little things that you need to kind of like be in tune to. And it's so hard because we're all working jobs. You know, the stay-at-home moms are rare. I'm super jealous of those moms because they get to be there for all the stuff. But, you know, I work sometimes 60 hours a week, and I don't notice the little things like my kid's not super hungry after school. Like, that's abnormal. Maybe it's like taking a lunch money, you know, that kind of thing. And so you just got to really be in tune to your kid and what's going on and to talk about it with them. You know, it's super important to talk to them about it. And, you know, I tell my kids, one of the things, I don't really worry about my kids being bullies because they're so compassionate. I mean, we talk about it so much. They're like, they could throw up. They don't want to hear it anymore. Right. But I tell them all the time, you know, you don't have to be the best speller. You don't have to be the best reader. You don't have to be the best at math. You don't have to be the best basketball player. But if you have to be the best at something, I want you to be the kindest. I want you to be the most accepting and the lovingest to other children. So if I consistently get things home from your teachers that say that you're a good human being and that you're doing wonderful things to make people feel accepted and being kind to them, then I can get past all that other stuff. And so we're constantly talking about bullying. And I worry not necessarily that my kid's going to be a bully. I worry more that my kid won't stop it. Right? So you know
right,
when you
right.
see these football players, like I'm reminded of, I think it was in Minnesota, Missouri, these high school football players on a JV team, this little girl's drunk, and they take her to the back and they do horrible things to her, right? Sexually assault her. And there's three guys that do it, but the whole team is there.
Right.
The whole damn team is there. And my fear is that I would raise a kid that wouldn't stop it. It's not that they would do it. I feel good about them not doing it. But it's my fear that I would raise a kid that wouldn't stop it. And so you got to talk about this kind of stuff all the time and let them know, you know, where boundaries are and, where we are proudest as parents is when you help someone that is less than. When a kid's, you know, being made fun of at school and you stop it, or if a kid's getting beat up at school and you pull the kid off of them. These are the things we want to see our kids do and talk about it with them. And if you're being bullied, you tell me because, you know, there are things mommy can do and daddy can do to help stop it without throwing you under the bus too.
Right.
That way you're not cool kid.
Right. Well, and you know what? And sometimes, you know what, depending on the situation, sometimes you have to be the not cool kid. And sometimes you got to take drastic measures and you know, put them in a different school or do something else. Because unfortunately, you know, a lot of the stuff fades away, later on in life. When I say it fades away, it doesn't people's ideas change and people's behaviors change. Not everybody. Again, there's always an exception to a rule, but you know, high school I think is kind of a weird universe. And
middle school's the worst.
Do you think middle school's worse?
Everybody. No one has a good experience in middle school. I've not met one person who's ever had a good middle school experience in my whole life.
I'm trying to think.
Middle school's the worst.
Yeah.
Think
so
about
for me,
it.
High school was the worst. I had the worst time in high school. But all right, so let's talk about this real quick because we're almost out of time. Is there a recourse for victims of bullying in courts? I mean, is there a time when I should say, hey, this is enough, let's go to court?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do as a parent is you got to make a paper trail. You've got to report it, and you just keep reporting it. And you're gonna feel like a water drop on that on the head of the administration, but. I mean, if you can't be your own child's advocate, then who can be, right? Who loves them more than the people who made them and the people that raise them and the people that love them? So you have to be a water drop on that administration's head. And then also, I think you got to take a step forward and the next step, and you have to say, why is my kid getting bullied? Is he getting bullied because he's a different color? Is he getting bullied because he's of his weight? Is it because of a religion? Is it a disability? And a lot of times we have kids with disabilities. I have a case right now with a school system where the young man committed suicide.
Mm.
And he was in middle school. And he was handicapped. He had autism. And the kids were relentless. And it never ended. And the school knew about it, and they weren't doing what they're required as a school to provide a safe learning environment for children. And if you can't do that, then the question is you know what has broken down, what has happened, and so you do have a recourse within the court system, and you need to take it. And this is why you can't stop entities from doing things like companies, school systems, that kind of stuff. You can't stop them. I can't put them in jail, right? Actually, in jail. But the only way we can punish them is to hurt them. You know, in order to incite change, we've got to have them. It's got to hurt. There's got to be like some kind of consequence. And the only way to get to that is to sue them. And it's like this family that I'm representing. It's not about the money for them. Lord knows, it has nothing to do with them. It's they don't want this to ever happen to another kid again. No family should have to bury their child because some little shit asshole at school, you know, made their life a living hell for years.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it. Everybody's going to notice that this is happening and nobody's stopping it.
Right.
And
in some cases, by the way, we have seen, you know, people from an organization being held to criminal standards. It doesn't happen very often. But it's rare. But my point being is that, you know what, it's never going to happen if you don't do it. You know, I mean, you got to do something. And let me tell you, this is why so many people, by the way, get away with it. Because
No one
the large majority of people.
Enough.
They won't stand up for themselves. They don't stand up for other people. So that's why a lot of organizations do what they do, because when they get caught, they'll pay a few million dollars and, you know, it's too late. They've already made hundreds of millions. That's why bullying, you know, that's why some bullies do it, because they get away with it and they get away with it for so long that by the time they get caught, you know, they're way ahead of the game. And this is something that we as a society, as citizens, need to stop.
It's got to stop somewhere, right? You know, people call me up. People, I have reporters. They'll call me and I'm like, "How do you get these cases, Amy? How do you get these crazy cases?" And the answer is easy. It's that I'm not afraid to say enough to the people who everybody's afraid to say enough to.
Yeah.
Whether it's the police department, whether it's the school system, whether it's a big company, I'm not afraid to say enough, because if you don't stop it, then it will never stop. If somebody's not doesn't have the guts enough to stand up and say it, then it's never going to change. It's never going to change. Matter of fact, I saw this quote. I got my Trial Lawyers College magazine in the mail. At the back of it, it said it was a quote by Robert F. Kennedy, and I thought, this is what my heart needed this morning. is that each time a man stands up for an ideal or act to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope in crossing each other from a billion different centers of energy and daring. Those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. I thought that is what my heart needed this morning. Because sometimes it feels like it feels like I'm taking on Goliath. And sometimes I am. And as a 5 foot tall little blonde girl, and I take on these huge entities, sometimes it feels overwhelming, but I'm just reminded that stop and saying enough is enough. And this isn't going to fly anymore. Then it helps throw the ripple out there that maybe it won't. That everybody knows, they'll notice it's not okay anymore. And give people hope on the other end.
And you know what? And sometimes, hope is all you need. You need that hope out there. Amy, we're out of time, but I want to say thank you so much and stopping by. This has been a great conversation talking about some of the stuff that is, it's very serious. A lot of people don't like to take it on, but, luckily for us, Amy Lawrence, criminal lawyer, likes to take on these big, tough cases. And so if somebody wants to reach out to Amy, if they want to talk to her, see if maybe get some information, they can reach you at the justiceislovely.com.
Yes, sir.
Justiceislovely.com. Justiceislovely.com. Amy Lawrence, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much, Bert. Always a pleasure.
All righty. Good stuff there from criminal attorney Amy Lawrence. But you can tell it's not just criminal law for her, right? It's not just about that. She's obviously, she's a mom and she's a daughter and she's a wife and she's very emotional. She's very passionate about what she does. And I'm so glad she talked about this stuff. And to be honest with you, when I saw this, I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to talk about this, but I'm so glad that we did because it does need to be talked about. And the more we talk about it, the more light that we shine on this kind of dark subject, the more, the cockroaches will hide, right? They will run because the reason that this has gone on for so long is, yes, it's been a mindset, but more than that is that we have refused to acknowledge it. We have refused to shine the light on it and say no more. So please share the show with everybody you know. Let's stop the bullying. Let's stand up for each other. Let's love one another. And if you need some help, reach out to Amy Lawrence. She'll talk to you at no charge, I'm sure. And just let her know that Bert Martinez said, hey, Amy, Bert said you weren't going to charge me for us to talk. She won't do it. She's a great person. As always, my friends, thank you so much. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.